in the private group for a couple of minutes. I'm thinking what they would like to hear from you. And I think one of the things is, what about this supplement that you designed? How did you get into, how did you get into that, and what's it good for?
Okay. So, you know, there's a part to it. You'll see me smiling about both products. And I smile about them differently because one, I smile in a similar way as like a family member would smile about their loved one or a parent around their child. Copperine has an incredible starting point of gathering intel and hearing from friends that that copper was being used in China as a way to combat this this virus, and then a bunch of really nice sort of synchronistic events took place for me to start, you know, hearing that from numerous sources in different ways, and then even hearing around somebody very specifically who had used copper very successfully. It started out as a project of water treatment to keep the tubing clean. That you know, when you've got a large chicken runs, hatcheries, those lines, they get clogged up, they get biofilm in them. And so this person who had explained this use of copper, they had said, you know, originally they were experimenting with ionic copper and nano copper to as a way to stop biofilm growing in these irrigation tubes. But what they found very quickly is that the chickens weren't getting sick.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the chickens weren't getting viral infections anymore, and the chickens didn't need antibiotics, and these chickens were thriving, and these chickens were gaining weight without artificial, you know, ways to fatten them up. And ultimately, it comes down to the fact that we spoke about, you know, how far back technology goes. So in Egypt, you know, they had a catchphrase around the time of Moses, which was copper gives life. It was like, you know, like the T-shirts now that say life is good. You know, back then they realized, and it wasn't just copper. It's very interesting to know that copper by itself is fairly toxic in the body. The body really doesn't like free-floating copper, nor does it like free-floating zinc, which is why they are antimicrobial on their own and why they work wonderfully as surfaces. But what the body really wants, and it's an incredibly intricate relationship, is the body wants copper and zinc to combine and form a copper alloy, or as we know it, brass. Moses mentions it as far as their part of their solution to the plague. He calls it the brazen rod.
And is that how they make brass? They put copper and zinc together?
That's brass, copper.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. It's considered a copper alloy, and then you get the ratio, and then you're into brass. And the entire Bronze Age, and if you talk about, you know, sort of the over exaggeration on what vaccines did to change our planet, you really actually have to give credit to the Bronze Age. We are a remnant. Our health and hygiene, especially in Western civilizations, is turning around now to the point where it's on a downhill, simply because we stopped using bronze and we've replaced it by plastics. But hospital beds, bedpans, the Seder plate. I mean, we talked about Jesus. Jesus would have been at the Last Supper with a bronze plate.
Tell people what bronze is, because we shouldn't assume that that's known.
So that's it's made with copper and zinc, and when you essentially make copperine, the way that we make it, replicates a substance in the body called SOD1. It's in a category of substances called dismutases, and it's a really fancy way to say scavengers of oxides. The structure of a dismutase is going after essential sort of steps along chemical processes that lead to oxides, and as an endpoint, all of those chemical changes, ultimately the pathway is that they're eventually going to create more electrons. And when you have free floating electrons, you get into something called reactive oxygen species, ROS. Mm-hmm. And really, the words can become very technical, but what you're getting into is the interaction of some of the earliest minerals and salts.
Okay, but you described brass and bronze the same way. Is there a difference?
Yes, so it's the same thing. Same thing. Yeah.
Oh, just different names.
Just different names. But same thing. They probably take a guess here, and after this, I'll look it up. But brass, bronze, and copper alloys are all the same thing. But along the way, they've had various ratios of how mm-hmm. much zinc and other metals would have been allowed in them to take on those names, and they would have been given the names defining them as differences, simply because they would have had different properties of malleability. Now, what we were able to make, and I worked with a chemical engineer and his team, a guy's name was Dr. Jim Laddie. He's passed away last year. And James Laddie was a PhD chemical engineer that had really worked for the who's who of the biggest companies in the world. But he had a quest. And I hope it was that this project was sufficient enough for him before he died, where he loved all of his work, and he has loads of patents, and he was a brilliant guy. But the space of his work never really gave him the opportunity of being a steward to the earth. He is a chemical engineer working for Big Oil and Big Chem. He knew how to play the roles, do the dance. But there was a part to him that always wondered, how do you do this work and truly have benefit for humanity? As a chemical engineer, I used him in a very interesting way. I think at first, I out of respect for him, I found myself minimizing my own role in the development of copperine. Mm-hmm. But the integrity of the story is important to me, and part of it is to encourage people to know how often experts are used. Where he was my sounding board. And he was also my traditional approach, where I would say, Jim, what chemical would you use if you mm-hmm. were trying to achieve this? This is where I'm at with it. This is where what I'm trying to do. You tell me. And he'd come back with these, really toxic substances. Yeah. And then I would look at them with him, and I would say, all right, break this down for me. What am I looking at over here? And he'd say, well, this is in the category of a surfactant. This is going to work like a soap. And this is toxic because it's acting like this. And then I would say, well, wouldn't vegetable glycerin do the same thing?
Right.
And he'd go, Dr. Braun, that's brilliant. and there was this, I wouldn't have got there without this back and forward where the role that I'm, the chemicals that I'm working out that are helpful are all in the range of antagonists and agonists. And in a way that was my relationship with him, where I was pushing him and saying, there's got to be a way we can do that and still remain food grade with all of us.
Yeah.
And we got there. I'm not sure that he ever thought we would, to be honest.
What was the objective that you were chasing in this project?
My objective was to create a soluble brass that would be closely matched to the way that I understood copper and zinc were working in the body. I wanted to create a completely non-toxic product that could be used the same way as a disinfectant is used on a surface. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be able to use it on the human tongue, on the back of the throat, in the mm-hmm. nasal passages. And I wanted it to replicate what would be happening in the real world and in regular world, without any artificiality. I didn't want it having complications where I was bringing in something that could have the effect For example, silver is very much like this. Silver is incredible as an antimicrobial, but silver is extremely low in terms of trace amounts in the human body. And so you've got to be very careful in terms of playing with nanosilver, that you are staying within ranges where the silver is not starting to be seen.
It's not a low concentration because God was wishing it could be higher and just couldn't find enough or something.
Maybe. And also because the way that these things work, I mean, we're all the same. I mean, we all matter from the stars, and there's a little piece of everything, which is, you know, also peculiar the way that we describe and we see toxins. For example, you know, I could tell somebody, don't eat that apple. It's got arsenic in it.
Yeah.
Well, of course, it's got arsenic in it.
There's others who think that that form of arsenic is a cancer treatment.
Right, exactly, and it is. I mean, for every poison used in the correct dose, can bring remedy, because ultimately all you're doing is you're striving for balance. And so that's the one product, copperine. It's a good question. I don't know that my brain even allows me to think so directly in terms of endpoint. I think I was chasing a aerosolized molecule that could chase down what I perceived to be the virus and its spike protein. And my original mission was pretty much very much like a SWAT team thinking, a tactical approach, that if they're telling us that this virus is aerosolized, then why can't we just fight it in the sky? You know, why can't we fight it in the air in a room?
Yeah.
Why do we have to, you know, wear a mask or a PPE or whatever it is? Why can't we do what the world does, which is, for example, every time there's a volcano eruption, and there's going to be a complete annihilation of life around that volcano, the volcano spews out copper as a starter pack, to keep the microbes that are going to come with death and destruction. It keeps it all under check. And so I was thinking, the original version of this, I was thinking, okay, if we could get something that was non-toxic and we could use it in humidifiers, in rooms, in nursing homes, in hospitals, if people could walk through a mist that was completely non-toxic. And we ultimately achieved that. And then I took it one step further, and I realized that part of the human nature and the human drama is that you have those that will risk an entire project by being excessive with something. And you will also complicate it that if you had hospital workers who wanted to walk through the mist, you would also have the same amount of people that said, I don't want to walk through a mist. I don't know what's in that stuff. And so we went with a very much an empowered choice, which is, you know, we individualized this product and we made it with a very small handheld nebulizer. And we also have instructions that people can nebulize it, and people use it in a humidifier, and people, you know, spray their clothes with it. They spray their food, whatever they want, as a non-toxic solution. And then go ahead.
Leads right into the discussion, which we will have time for another time, about the nature and the existence of viruses.
Yeah, so I think what's easy for me around this concept is, like, I don't, in everything that I've looked at molecularly and the structure and the charges, you know, when you look at the envelope of what they're saying a virus looks like, I leave room for the very existence for viruses, because all I'm seeing is a primitive jellyfish. They are along an evolutionary chain. They are a group of proteins that stick together, that can self-organize, and they can encode so that they can ultimately, just like a typewriter, they can make more of themselves without much mechanical intervention. It's it would be the equivalent of a magnet underneath a piece of paper. Right. And you throw iron filings on it, and if you wanted to replicate a certain shape, and you only wanted a certain amount of iron filings that would reach a threshold and then no more would stick, the rest you could shake off, you could very easily, without a brain or consciousness, you could create a self-organization simply just around ionic charges.
Right.
And so viruses for me are just the very early forms of life as peptides. They're mostly protein and they have the starting points of what gave us life, where you can find early versions of glucose. And that's about that's about all that they need to be this this thing that floats around, that interacts with all other beings.
Are you getting feedback from people who buy the supplement, the copperine, of what benefits they're getting from it?
Oh, yeah, and both products. So the other one, without going into detail, because it doesn't need much detail, the other one is it's from the cashew nut. It's called Anacardic, and it's basically an anti-inflammatory, anti-cancer, antioxidant. And I think that even that, what I've started realizing, and I don't like it, because I can just as much play into the same way that pharmaceuticals companies do it. The world, we owe the world a much simpler language. And so anacardic, interesting enough, they call it anacardic acid, but it's an oil. And antioxidants, anti-inflammatories, anti-cancers are just a fancy way to say an oil that has functional purposes in the body that can play a role in creating balance. And so the feedback I get from people is quite wonderful in terms of the original unexpected from copperine was a bunch of people told me that it helped to stabilize their glucose levels, that they were diabetic.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
And there's a whole pathway to that as well that that involves sort of the balance. And a part of it is just the clearing of toxins that are creating the issues that then give you these other imbalances. That was an unexpected. Another one was there are certain people where their earwax has been traditionally very hard and they land up getting ear infections and also mechanically have to clear their ears a lot. And so because people are breathing in copperine, they got feedback from a bunch of people to say, wow, this is really interesting. It softened up my earwax and my ears are clearing without much mechanical intervention. And then on the anacardic, I think that the feedback I get, which is just wonderful, which is within weeks, people write and say, I just cannot believe what this has done for my arthritis or for my knee pain, or you know, I just that's incredible that this, you know, range of motion has improved. And you know, that's fascinating to see that it matches the literature. And
does that come in a capsule?
It does. It does. Okay. And we're currently working on an anacardic plus that will be anacardic and with a vitamin A, D, E, K, and specifically K2 and resveratrol. And I'm really building that and won't market it for this, but I really am building this as those that are suddenly aware that the vaccine has essentially put them into a death spiral. In part what's desperately needed from keeping people from heading towards AIDS and quite immune deficiency.
You're talking about the anacardic.
The anacardic with the anacardic plus with vitamin. The body, in terms of the chemical processes that that the spike protein induces, and not just the venom, but other aspects of it, is that it creates a endless cycle of hyperimmunity. And so in a perfect world, it's sort of like if you think about what was that old TV show with the conveyor belt with the candy, the black and white, like an old skit. It will come to us, but in a perfect world,
I Love Lucy.
Yes, there we go. I Love Lucy. In a perfect world, the resources would match sort of the output that's needed. So if the body has been given this instruction that it needs to create this endless antibody production, mm-hmm. then if in a perfect world, if it didn't run out of vitamins A, D, E, K, and it had the right chemistry and the temperature was right and this person was getting enough sunlight, they actually wouldn't slide into AIDS. They would keep up. They could essentially keep up that hyperimmunity, but if the conveyor belt was moving fast enough. But it's virtually impossible to simulate that in the real world. The body also has other stresses, and you're going to end up being deficient in one of those main vitamins. And then once those start crashing, as I'm sure you know, then others start going down with them. And ultimately, you land up being immunocompromised because the building blocks are not there.
So you're really working toward a way to help the vaccine injured victims.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Well, I think that I think I was right on my own. Calculations were very similar to David Martin. Dr. Martin recently put out 700 million people at a minimum.
I think that's probably really conservative.
It is conservative. It's conservative, and it's also the challenge with this is that you can try and work out sort of which would have the most or least impact, but 700 million lights going out all at the same time would be devastating, but it would also be a sudden jolt. There's in any systemic change, a massive die-off comes with its own issues, but then so does a slow die-off. Not only problematic in a different sense because it's you don't get an opportunity to react to it. It's like the proverbial frog boiling, that by the time people realize that there's a problem, it will be too late. But yeah. The other side to it is that that's where the opportunity lies, because it is slow enough that those that want the help or those that realize what's happening to them, they're ultimately going to need some pretty easy solutions to slow down this process.
Right. And you're saying this is one of the major ones.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am. And I can say that because anacardic is a wonderful antioxidant, but I'm also saying it because I'm not saying it in some form of absolute that it's the only one. The key point over here is that to really understand we have the science of this sort of death spiral. We're not starting from scratch. The science here is essentially the science of longevity. There's been so much work over the last couple of decades on antioxidants and various forms of oxidative stress in our body. And
what about the presence of things like graphene hydroxide and nanotech? That are not typical stress problems.
Yeah, so I purposefully, I think that it's just so that I can keep my focus. I sort of gradually move into more of the obscure things that come out. I make sure that I stay at least somewhat current with information that's come out, but I haven't taken a deep dive in anything of that's more than likely there, but still it fits into the category of plausible, possible, is there, but not enough for me to tackle it. I also think that the there's a little bit of an overlap for me in that even if somebody had purposefully put graphene oxide and other nano metals into these vaccines, that's not dissimilar to what venom is. Okay. Venom are metalloproteins. So if you're going to start dealing with things that in the body have magnetic properties, Then ultimately, whether they are coming from graphene oxide or they're coming from a series of amino acids that bind to metals and are now considered synthetic metalloproteins, the effects on the body are going to be the same. And so that's sort of the easiest way that I can continue on the work without having to be 100% certain of what's in there and what's not in there.
Yeah, which is necessary. Well, if we get time sometime, that would be an interesting subject for a discussion. You know, just the overall focus of what do we do to maximally help all the vaccine injured people that are going to be looking.
Yeah, I'll go back to, I hate to do this on a pessimistic note, but I'll use my own mom currently, who is vaccinated and boosted and is currently on another round of some form of flu or cold. Yeah. And I, you know, give her suggestions, some of which she has taken up from the beginning. She's doing great and is 76 years old and has survived through this pandemic and has had COVID. And part of it is that she's used copperine and antibiotic from the beginning. So that's been a wonderful gift that she gave back to me. The challenge is that I, without complete sort of her saying, okay, explain why I'd be getting this kind of flu now and what would you do about it? The information is, the buy-in is much less likely. And so gauging by my own friends and family members, and somebody said to me, are people ready to accept that the vaccine has injured them in a way that they are, it's created systemic cycles of illness. And mostly what I'm a little head on, but is starting to catch up. I know people are starting to talk about protein folding and amyloid features, but there's something a lot more simple than what that than what the spike protein does, both in you know, as COVID, a viral form, if you want to look at it like that, or the vaccine. It really needs to be understood that what that endless cycle is that it changes the immune system from an antibody driven system of making these fat globules that fit round things as a way to stop them. You know, they change their molecular shape and weight. The body can't keep up with the manufacturing process of these resources. And so it starts going into methods that include fibrotic tissue. And so in another metaphor that crosses over to other work, this is the difference between pursuing a subject where you're still in a vehicle chase and you've got lights and sirens on to a barricaded subject. And and whether somebody has been barricaded because you were chasing them or because they thought that was a strategic approach, it absolutely changes the lethality of the event for the worse. For everybody, because at the end of the day, the desperation reaches a new level when somebody doesn't have an exit point. At that point, you don't know what you're dealing with in terms of, we've had numerous, way to compare this is that there's been an uptick in people that create homicides and suicides and then take out first responders by setting their houses on fire or exploding their houses. So a crossover is that this vaccine does that to the immune system, where the immune system essentially blocks in the pathogens. And instead of using fat globules and macrophages to eat them slowly and digest them, they are building nets around them with fibrotic tissue and capturing them and then eating them with corrosion, with acid.
Okay.
And so the destruction on tissue around that and the potential of clotting and the potential of other issues, systemic issues, is much higher when your immune system is working. And the closest matches are pulmonary fibrosis, cystic fibrosis, And then there's another version of this, which is that the older you are, the more likely you are to switch over to that fibrotic system. The younger folk, the issue with them is not fibrotic tissue, it's leukemia. If they are not able to keep up with building antibodies fast enough, then their body will get an instruction to pull immature antibodies that are stored in bone marrow. Right. And so once you start drawing out immature cells from bone marrow, you're into leukemia.
It's like using the 10-year-olds to join the army because you're desperate or something.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. And so now you have a problem, because once you start doing that, essentially what you're doing is you're also drawing on stem cells and you're forcing them to come and be part of an immune system rather than all the other things that stem cells do.
Where they're really needed.
Yeah. And so that's the cancers.
So at your site, where are you going to let people have updates about what you're up to and how these things are developing?
I can say yes to the best of my ability, in terms of I'm really splitting my time between fulfilling managing to scale up the coprine and anacardic, and I'm working on two other compounds that are necessary. Okay. And then also the way that I find best and why I absolutely take up these opportunities, and I'm honored and thrilled to do interviews like we did, is that I believe that in a world that where the people are struggling to find the truth, it is important for people to hear verbal testimony. Yeah. And I'm totally fine to give out as much information as I can through the power of speaking, and I think that what that does as well is that even though occasionally I'll see comments from people about that guy, don't trust that guy, he believes in viruses, or don't trust that guy, he's pushing supplements or something. For the majority,
you believe in snake venom too now, right?
Exactly. I'm the originator. And so I think that what it's taught me as well is that when you allow people the space to listen to you talk, and especially when it's when you have somebody that's willing to push hard in questions, it does give people the ability to use their own BS detector to the best of their ability to start being discerning.
It's a time efficient way to get information out.
Yeah. And then also, I think I do this, I try and do this in every time that I get an opportunity to get information out, is that I try and give out solutions that are much more about thinking and being empowered and craving knowledge and curiosity, because that allows other people to go out and solve their problem. I'm sort of I am a role model for somebody who tackled a really challenging solution to this. I went out and built a whole new compound.
Yeah, exactly.
And I wasn't a chemical engineer.
In other words, you don't have to feel helpless.
Right. I mean, who was I? I just a guy that saw an opportunity of a new compound that the world needed, and was in the right time and the right place. Deeply stubborn. That process of taking something that ultimately could be created and scaled in very toxic ways, and then I could land up with this detergent-like product that would have copper in it. The stubbornness of turning away candidate ingredients at every turn and just saying, well, there's got to be a way of making that with food. And there's got to be a way that if I licked this thing, that it would be fine, or sprayed in my eye, it would be fine. Or if I overdosed on it.
Life friendly.
Right. So that stubbornness is also a stubbornness that I'm trying to encourage, and especially in the youth. I mean, I think that this, I can only be a role model to those that say, well, this guy can figure this out. So can I.
Exactly. Yeah. Everybody's got potential they can't imagine, especially when they've been brainwashed to think that they can't do anything.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is, yeah, I think that, you know, wonderfully, I'll end by saying that there's certain things that you can't choose for your offspring. But my wife and I are hugely independent and very stubborn. And it's incredible to see that you can give offspring the space where I'm not trying from day one. My wife and I have decided we're not trying to get him to fit into a round hole somewhere.
I suspect you haven't dumped your kids off at public school.
No, and he's very young, and so we're not even faced with that choice at the moment. But okay, you know, we are making similar choices in terms of who he's entrusted with, in terms of being good around him and keeping him, and it becomes important, I think, at this time to really feel comfortable to define your value systems, right, and then find non-obnoxious ways. Because it's very easy to take value systems and become obnoxious. You find non-obnoxious ways just to keep doing the things that are important to you. Thank you. Yes. And let's talk again. And thank you
anytime.
So much.
Anytime. We'll stay in touch.